me. I cannot lie any more. And it was indeed a lie, a childish one. Here, I cannot lie to myself. She's gone. She is not coming back. And even if I found her, I wouldn't be able to kill her. The weakness in this confession to myself astounds me, embarrasses me. I hate myself for it. And yet, I know I would hate myself more, standing over her dead body. I think of another dark-eyed woman, a former queen who had been kind to me when I hadn't deserved it, who I had not spared, and feel a little pang of regret. What I felt for Elena is so much greater than what I once felt for a kind enemy I barely knew. My body physically recoils at the thought of what the wound of her death might feel like. I force myself back to my feet. My hands are so badly cut that the blood overflows the carvings. I got some of it on my face, stinging my eye. I raise my gaze to the thing of beauty before me. This fortress, designed to hold a greater power than any king, nightborn or otherwise, had ever wielded before me. And yet I concern myself with some human woman. I force my shame and my hurt away to a dark place in the corner of my mind, never to be acknowledged again. Let her go, I tell myself. She isn't worth anything, I tell myself. I pull my hand away. I felt sick. I didn't even come back to awareness this time until the wall was already down and I had fallen to the floor with it. I was on my hands and knees on the stone, retching. I'd eaten very little today. Nothing had come up but a few spatters of putrid liquid. I wiped my mouth with the back of my hand and raised my head. Now, the only thing that stood before me was the column. Column, no, that wasn't a strong enough word for it. An obelisk. The carvings on this one were, I could see now, a little different than those in the rest of the cave. Even if I couldn't fully articulate how. The strokes a little messier, the circles a little more crooked. The night fire had dimmed. Or did I imagine that the room was darker now? The angry red glow of the carvings seemed more aggressive with each of my heartbeats, matching them in cadence. My father's memories. Hurt, anger, fear burned in my veins. The terrifying dual blade of his love and his disgust for my mother. I hated feeling it. I hated him for feeling it. I stared at that obelisk. I blinked and a tear rolled down my cheek. I didn't want to. The memories, the emotions had only grown more intense as I moved to the center of the room. I was losing my grip on myself. This, I feared, might break me. Worse, it might break whatever fragile image I still had of the father that I'd loved. The father that had loved me. What a fucking coward it made me to still treasure that after everything. But I came here for a reason. There was only one place to go next, one remaining piece of the lock. I stood, swaying on my feet, stepped into the final circle. I didn't need to open the gash again. My hand was already covered in blood. I laid it against the stone.
Chapter 70. Rain. My wings wouldn't work. I couldn't slow myself, stop myself before the ground rose up to hit me. Pain. I tried to move. Something cracked. I couldn't make my eyes open. When I tried, a face I hadn't seen in a very, very long time leaned over me. My brow furrowed. Nessunin? She looked just as she had 200 years ago, curly dark hair falling around her face as she leaned down next to me. Her eyes, chestnut dark and a million miles deep, stared hard into me, wet with tears. "Who wins?" she asked, voice cracking. "Who wins? If you fight him?" She'd said it to me so many times back then, countless times, dragging me back from the line every time I thought I would cross it. I'd always thought that Nessunin was so much stronger than I was. But now, in this version of her, it seemed so obvious that she was just terrified. She was a lonely and abused woman who was a prisoner in her own marriage. She didn't fight because she was too afraid. Because it took a stupid kind of courage to keep fighting even when you knew every odd was stacked against you. I reached out and touched her chin. She grabbed my hand and held it there, a tear rolling down her cheek.
"Who wins?" she said again.
"Maybe not me," I replied. "But worth a try, right?" She tried to hold on to my hand, but I pulled it away. I opened my eyes. Above me, carnage unfolded in the skies. Spatters of blood from warriors locked in battle hundreds of feet above dripped onto the rocks like black rain. A drop of it struck my cheek. It was a nightmare. The kind of sight that, I knew in this moment, would wake me in a cold sweat 10 years from now, if I was lucky enough to make it that far. I tried to push myself up. A spasm of agony took my breath away. Ix's fucking tits. My body was broken, absolutely broken. I'd pushed it too far these last few weeks. Whatever Simon had just done to me had nudged it over the edge. I'd died before. I knew what it felt like to stand on the precipice of the end. Not yet. I lifted my head. Another drop of blood from above struck my forehead, rolling down into my right eye, tinting the world black-red. Through it, I took in the ruins around me. I'd landed on a rock, smashing up my right side. My wings were still out, though I could tell right away that the right one was now useless. That arm, too, refused to cooperate when I reached for my sword. I grabbed the hilt with the left one instead, every muscle protesting the weight. I lifted my head. There, through the ruins, Simon staggered to his feet. The front of his leathers was smeared with blood. One of his wings was askew in all the wrong places, sticky black blood matting the feathers. The thing on his chest pulsed brighter now, bright enough that it surged through the night and illuminated the harsh panes of his face from below. He swayed back and forth, clutching his head, letting out a chilling roar that sounded like it belonged to an animal. Then he straightened, and his eyes fell on me. I dug my sword into the ground and used it to force myself upright. Son, fucking take me. My knees almost buckled, almost. I didn't show it. I just smiled. Didn't realize how much blood was in my mouth until the expression made it dribble down my chin. I was eternally conscious of the door behind me. The door that Simon's gaze fixed on before returning to me. No, he wasn't getting past me. I'd spent long enough letting him into my thoughts and fears. I'd given him too damned much already. This was where it ended, whatever it cost. I lifted my sword, forced my violently trembling right arm to join my left. "Come on," I told my body when it nearly wept in protest. "One last fight. You've got it in you, old man." Amazing what a mindset could do. Because when Simon lunged at me, lips twisted into a snarl, unnatural magic flaring around him like fire around a match, I was ready.
Chapter 71. Araya. My father stood before me. The room had grown dim and hazy, as if coated in a thick fog. Nothing felt real except for the foggy, gray nothingness. Foggy, gray nothingness. And him. I had dreamt of Vincent countless times, but this version of him felt so much more real than even the most vivid of them. The fine details of his face struck me like a knife to the chest. All the things I didn't realize I'd forgotten. Like the slight crookedness to his nose, or the way his hair favored the left side over the right. The version of him in my mind was generic, sanded down by months of absence, even as my grief clung to him. I said, mostly because I needed to remind myself, "You're not real. None of this was real." Vincent smiled sadly at me. aren't I? Mother, his voice. I'm real in every way that matters, he said. You're a dream, a hallucination. I've lost a lot of blood and... I left so much of myself here in this room. Vincent's eyes lifted, as if taking in this place beyond what was shrouded in darkness. More than I ever had intended to give it. And all of that still remains, even if I do not. Isn't that real, little serpent? It seemed so, so real. I'm inventing you, I whispered, because you're what I want to see. He lifted one shoulder in a delicate half shrug. It was such a familiar movement, it made my breath stutter. Perhaps, he said. Does it matter? In this moment, it felt like it didn't. He stepped closer and I took a step back. He froze, momentary pain crossing his face. The things you've seen here have so tainted your image of me. I meant to give this place all my greatest achievements, my greatest ambitions. Instead, it became a monument to all my greatest mistakes. So many mistakes in the end. Never you. Vincent's final words flitted through my mind. He flinched, as if he heard them too. So many mistakes in the end, he murmured. I never wanted you to see this version of me.
I never wanted to see you this way. And goddess, I meant it. Sometimes I envied myself from a year ago, who'd known beyond any doubt that her father loved her. Yes, it was the only thing she could believe in, but that at least was solid, immovable. Losing my trust in Vincent was more than losing trust in a single person. It had broken something within me, destroyed my ability to put that trust into anyone else. Pain flashed over his face, there and gone again so quickly I thought it might be a trick of the light. The idea that this version of him could be a figment of my own mind slipped further away. If it was a hallucination, it was such a perfect one that it might as well be real. And with him standing right in front of me, the anger that I'd been suppressing for months bubbled up to the surface. You lied to me, I ground out. My entire life, you told me the world was a cage. But it was you that put me there. You manipulated me from the time I was... I saved you, he snapped, lurching closer. Then he winced, as if he had to clamp down on his anger, force it back. You kidnapped me, I choked out. You killed my mother and you... I did not kill her. Yes, you did. My voice boomed through the room, echoing off the stone ceilings. You went to Salonae that night knowing she lived there. You destroyed it, knowing. No, I'd had enough of this. No more lies. I've had almost 20 years worth of them. I'm done. Done. Vincent snapped his jaw shut. A muscle twitched in his cheek, as if flexing with the force of withheld words. The room seemed to grow a little more solid, the fog thinning. He turned to the column, laying his hand against it. He drew in a breath and let it out slowly, his shoulders lowering. This magic, he said, more calmly, is a living thing. And this, the center, is the most demanding piece of all. I've had to come back over the years, feed it more of myself to keep the spell strong. It's the most important one, and yet the weakest, because I had to get a different sorcerer to help me finish it. After she left. He didn't say it, didn't need to. His gaze slipped over his shoulder. The anger was gone. Only sadness remained. Suddenly, my father looked so breathtakingly old. Not the old of wrinkled skin or graying hair, but the old of sheer exhaustion, right from the soul. Do you want to see, little serpent? He murmured. What memory it took from me. No, I almost said. I didn't want to see it. But I'd come too far to turn back now. Swallowed too many lies to turn away the truth. Slowly, I joined him at the obelisk. I lifted my hand and laid it over his. The night is cold, the only heat from raging fires that burn the city of Salonae. I do not feel either. As I fly over the city, a shell of what it once was, I feel nothing but satisfaction. It has been a hard year. I've worn this crown for close to 2 centuries. Few Nightborn kings, few Obitrean kings in general, managed to cling to power for so long. I have known this for a long time, but lately, my enemies have been stirring in the shadows. I feel them surrounding me at every party, every meeting. I feel their eyes on me when I am alone in my bedchamber and when I stand before my people. Power is a bloody, bloody business. I have gotten soft these last few years. But the time for softness is over. I need to carve away my weaknesses like rotting flesh. And there is one particular necrosis that I've allowed to plague me for too long, because I've been weak. Too weak to give up my little fantasies about a woman, a human woman who scorned me, and the bizarre comfort I got from the idea that she was still alive somewhere, and my shameful commitment to a promise I once made to her. Lately I've been having dreams. Dreams of her. Dreams of myself, driving my sword through my father's chest. Dreams of a silver-eyed little boy thrusting a blade through my heart. I didn't come to Salonae to kill her. I tell myself this, though I don't know why. No previous Nightborn king would hesitate to kill such an obvious liability. "You're too soft," my own father whispers to me. And I know he's right. I don't need to kill her, I tell myself. I only need to kill the child. The child is the danger. She is inconsequential. But when I fly over the Salonae human districts, burning and burning with nightfire, and I land before the pile of ruin that used to be a house, I'm not expecting the intensity of emotion that spears me. I stare at the house, what once was a house, for a long moment. I smell no life. I hear no heartbeat. Once I could sense her from across the room, across the castle, like her body itself called to me, making its presence constantly known. Her absence now is even more overpowering. A great hole that has opened up in my soul. Regret, fierce and unrelenting, tears me up. 3 of my soldiers surround the remains of the house, but they haven't yet seen me. I consider flying away. Every part of me wants to turn away from this wreckage and lock it somewhere I don't have to think about it. But the absence of the heartbeat I was looking for made me miss the one that remained. The 3 Hiage below were circling something, their interest piqued with hunger. I can at least finish what I came here for. I land. One of the soldiers is cursing and rubbing his bloody hand. "A lamb," he mutters. "More like a viper." Then the warriors notice me and hurry to bow. I don't pay attention to them, because by then, I have seen you. You are a lone flicker of light in an expanse of death. The only living thing in this pile of rubble. In my dreams, my child is a mirror of myself. It is my own face I see when I think of dying by my heir's hand. But you, little serpent, look so much like your mother. I kneel before you. You are so very small. Surely small for your age, though I'm not sure exactly how old that is. Time can be strange for vampires. Your mother has lingered with me for so long that sometimes I can't remember how long it has been since she left. You have long, slick black hair that covers your face, and freckles over your nose that blend with the smears of blood and soot, wrinkling as you sneer at me. They make me think of another time, long ago. But those eyes. You have my eyes. Silver as the moon, round and full of steel rage. The rage is mine too. The fearlessness. I reach for you, and though I can hear in your heartbeat that you're afraid, you don't hesitate to snap at me, sinking your little teeth deep into my finger. I will not lie to you, little serpent. I was expecting to kill you that night. But what I was not expecting was to love you so devastatingly much. It hits me so suddenly, so overwhelmingly, that I don't even have time to brace myself against it. You glare at me, like you're ready to go down fighting even against one of the most powerful men in the world, and I smile a little despite myself. It takes me a minute to recognize the sensation in my chest. Pride. I think of my own father, and the way he spent my entire life crippling me out of fear of what I would become. Think of the night he casually threw my newborn baby brother out the window to the demons. It is incomprehensible to me that my father ever felt for me the way I feel in this moment. Surely no one ever has. I cannot describe the depth of that emotion, nor the intensity of the terror that comes with it, bound together so inextricably. I came here to excise my greatest weakness, and instead, I now offer up my heart to it. From that moment, little serpent, I could not entertain the possibility of killing you. I'll do the next best thing, I tell myself. I will raise you. I will protect myself from you by protecting you from a world that would teach you how to kill me. It can be different, I tell myself, than how it was with my father and me. It can be different than how it was with her. I pick you up. You're so tiny and fragile in my arms. Even though you're terrified of me, you cling to my neck, like some part of you knows exactly who I am. I'm already more afraid than I ever have been. Afraid of you and what you could do to me. Afraid of the world that could kill you so easily. Afraid of myself, gifted with another fragile heart that I know I cannot keep. But my little serpent, it is the most wonderful fear. Every minute with you is, even if I already regret all the mistakes I know I will make. I drew in a gasp. My chest hurt. The air burned. I was on my knees now. I forced my eyes open through the noxious smoke. No, not smoke. Magic of some kind. Thick and red, shimmering in a million colors at once. Maybe that was why tears streaked down my cheeks. Maybe not. Vincent was kneeling beside me. His hand was on my shoulder, but I couldn't feel his touch. And for a moment, that devastated me. No matter how real he felt, no matter how real he looked, he was gone. He smiled sadly at me.
I tried, Aurea,
he murmured.
I tried.
I understood the depth of what he was admitting in those two words. Centuries worth of brutality ingrained into him. Revered above all else. Millennia worth of generations of bloody ends and bloody beginnings. I had never seen Vincent admit weakness before. And those words were a concession of so many failures. And yet I was still so angry at him. It wasn't enough, I choked out, fractured with an almost sob. His throat bobbed.
I know, little serpent,
he murmured.
I know.
He tried to stroke my hair, but I felt nothing. Because Vincent was dead. All of it was true at once, that he had saved me, that he had crippled me, his selfishness and his selflessness. That he had tried, that he had failed, and that he had loved me anyway. And I would carry all of that forever, for the rest of my life, and he would still be dead. I forced myself to my feet. I turned to Vincent. His image, once so sharp, was starting to fade. He looked to the obelisk.
I think, he said, this is what you came here for.
I followed his gaze. The pillar had opened, revealing a cavity full of rippling crimson light, and there, at its center, was a little vial, floating, self-contained in the air. The liquid within contained impossible multitudes of color, shifting and changing with every passing second, purple and blue and red and gold and green all at once, like the range of shades in a galaxy. The blood of Alaris. I whispered.
Your mother and I gave up so much to distill this.
His gaze found mine again.
But we gained so much, too.
What do I do with it? Do I drink it or wield it?
You can drink it, only a little bit. Or you can put it in your blades. It will find a way to give you its power, however you wield it. Your blood is the catalyst.
What will it do to me? I thought of Simon and his bloodshot, empty eyes, those teeth that had taken more from him than they had given.
It will make you powerful,
Vincent said. What else?
I cannot say.
There was a reason I knew why he had never used the blood. It was a power so great, it could only be an absolute last resort. I reached into the compartment and closed my hand around the vial. It took a moment to realize the scream that sliced the air was mine. Everything disappeared but the pain for several long seconds. I was dripping with sweat when, inch by inch, I withdrew it from the obelisk. Vincent's form now flickered. The light that imbued the carvings shuddered and skipped.
Go,
he said.
You don't have much time.
His voice sounded so far away. He gave me a gentle smile.
Don't forget those teeth of yours, little serpent.
And Goddess, despite everything, I hesitated. Despite everything, I was not ready to let him go. I would never be ready to let him go. I love you, I said. Because it was still true. After everything, it was still true. I didn't wait for him to say it back to me. I wiped the tears from my cheeks and turned away. The image of Vincent withered away into darkness. I didn't look back.
Chapter 72. Rain. Simon didn't let up, and I matched him. The two of us locked ourselves in nonstop combat, swords and magic clashing in a blurred, cacophonous melody. The blood from the battle in the skies above now rained down over us in a steady rhythm, drenching us in black, covering us in so much blood it was impossible to tell how much of it was our own. I no longer felt the blows. The pain was so constant that I just let it fall into the background, another distraction to be ignored. I wasn't sure how I wasn't dead yet. Felt like I should be. My body threatened to give out with every movement. I just kept telling myself, one more swing, one more. I didn't expect to come out of this alive, but I sure as fuck wasn't about to let Simon live either. Whenever I could steal precious seconds, I glanced over my shoulder to the distant doorway in the ruins, an abyss of black, with no sign of Araya. With every passing minute, my heart crawled up my throat. Come on, princess, where are you? I was grateful that holding off Simon took all my focus. Otherwise, I'd linger too long on the millions of horrifying scenarios that danced in the back of my head. Araya's body broken by traps or crushed by stone or burned up by magic she couldn't control. Smack! An especially devastating strike from Simon slammed me against a sheet of rock. I felt the impact in my bones. My head lolled, my vision dipped into fuzzy white. When I forced myself back to consciousness mere seconds later, the first thing I saw was Simon's snarling face rushing toward me. I barely managed to roll out of the way, countered clumsily. Warmth dotted my face in a fresh spray of blood. I hit something, wasn't sure what, couldn't count how many blows I'd gotten in by now. He roared and returned my strike. Another spatter of red-black over his cheek now, another distant throb of pain, another wound. Couldn't count those either. I tried to swing my sword and realized my left arm had now completely given up on working. Fuck. I switched hands, quickly drawing back. Too slow. I slammed against another column, the broken edge jamming into my spine at just the right angle to knock the breath from my lungs. My body slumped against it and wanted desperately to stay that way. Don't you dare, I told it. Get the fuck up. Simon stalked toward me. He was a pathetic sight, too, limping, blood smearing down his face. One eye was now missing, or at least it seemed like it was, beneath the mess of tattered flesh. Still, that damned magic pulsed at his chest, stubbornly clinging on despite every blow I levied to it. keeping him going long after any mortal body would give out, making him stronger than I ever could be. "You," he growled out, "should not be so much trouble." Movement out of the corner of my eye, I made the mistake of looking. Araya. For a moment, I thought maybe I was hallucinating. She staggered from the darkness. Blood drenched her hands and smeared her face. She was running, though half stumbling, looking around wildly. And she was surrounded by magic. I'd seen her wielding her nightfire before, but this, it was fucking magnificent. It embraced her now, licks of stunning white blue cutting through the night, fanning out around her like the wings of the gods themselves. Yet the magic that pulsed around her left hand, which was closed tight, was different than the nightfire. I could sense it even from here, feel it in the air. The clusters of smoke around that clenched fist were red and dark, and otherworldly in a way that made my skin crawl, even from all the way over here. It clung to her like it was made for her, wisps lingering at her skin and the blades at her hips. I had no doubts of what I was seeing. She had it. She fucking did it. For a few endless seconds, my relief and pride battled each other for dominance, neither winning. But then I saw Simon's head turn. His bloodthirsty fury melted away, replaced by something even more terrifying. Lustful desire. He knew. He felt it too. He dropped me and started to turn. Araya's gaze met mine across the ruins. A second of eye contact that seemed to last an eternity, holding a million unspoken words teetering on the edge of the end. I wished I could use this moment to say all that I wanted to, so many things I wished I'd said. I hoped she knew it all anyway, because I didn't even have to think before I charged. It was like my body knew what was happening and deemed it a worthy cause for one last push beyond the edges of my capability. Every shred of my remaining strength, physical and magical, united in this single lunge. Asterisk roared to the surface of my skin, clinging to my blade, my hands. My arms managed to lift the weight of my sword one last time. I leaped at Simon, wings spreading to propel me through this final strike, and I buried my sword into his back, pouring every scrap of magic I had into that blow, ripping him apart from the inside out. Black light overtook my vision. Simon let out an animalistic bellow and whirled around. The only piece of the world I managed to cling to was the hilt of my sword. Everything else withered. I'd unleashed something in Simon. His strikes now nothing but feral rage. Gone were the final vestiges of the calculated warrior. He was practically coming at me with teeth and fingernails. He hurled me against the wall, his hands slammed against my throat, pinning it to stone. I couldn't see, couldn't feel anything but my grip around that hilt. That was all I needed anyway. Because as his fingers tightened around my throat, as his blade drove into my flesh over and over again, I clutched that hilt with everything I had, and pushed, and pushed, and pushed. The blade parted leather, muscle, organs. He was so far gone that it took what felt like an eternity for the wound to catch up to him. Slowly, his eyes, bloodshot and frenzied, went distant. At least, I thought to myself, I got to see what that looked like. His arm faltered mid-swing. My strength gave out. My hand, blood-slicked, slipped from my sword, which was now lodged firmly into his torso. I couldn't reach for it again. A sudden release of pressure as someone grabbed Simon and yanked him off me. The blurry image of Simon's slackening face was replaced with Araya's. Now that was a welcome trade. I tried to tell her so, but I couldn't speak. Her eyes were so wide and bright, like two silver coins. She said something I couldn't hear over the rush of blood in my ears. She was shaking. "You don't have to look so scared, princess," I tried to tell her. But when I attempted to straighten, I only fell to my knees. and everything was dark.
Chapter 73. Aurea.
Rain!
I didn't mean to scream his name. It ripped itself from my throat when he fell. I barely heard it so much as I felt it, a distillation of emotion too powerful to remain inside me. I had run from those tunnels into the bowels of fucking hell. The sight of it had shocked me, horrified me. The sky was dark with warriors tangled in combat, and the sandy ground of the ruins drenched with flower bloom spatters of blood that rained from the bodies above. In the distance, beyond the rocks, our ground forces were locked in combat with the Bloodborne. Human, Hiage, Rishon, Bloodborne, all tearing each other apart. No horror story could top this. No nightmare. Not even the prison of the gods could be worse than this. And yet, none of it was as horrifying as seeing Rain like this. A collection of broken tissue and tattered flesh lying on the ground. Suddenly, I was on the grounds of the Colosseum in the final trial. Suddenly, I was losing him all over again. Rain. I grabbed him by the shredded leather of his armor and shook him hard. Get up! Get the fuck up! His head lolled. I expected a bleary blink, a half smile, a fuck you too, princess. What I got was nothing. I pressed my hand to his chest. Or at least I tried to, even though it required me to do the impossible, find an expanse of skin that wasn't an open wound. It rose and fell, so weakly. He was alive, but I knew that wouldn't last. I'd spent so much of my life sensing death looming over me, I knew what it felt like when it was near. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Simon stir. He was a monster at this point, a grotesque puppet of twisted flesh and gore. But that magic, that noxious, terrible magic, would keep him going. I shook Rain again. Rain! I forbid you to die on me, do you understand? Get the fuck up! You swore to me! You swore! Never again, he'd promised me in the springs. He swore to me that he would never betray me again, and this, losing him, felt like the greatest betrayal. No, I refused to let it happen. I grabbed my blade and sliced my hand open again, squeezing the blood into Rain's parted lips. It pooled and dribbled out pathetically from the corner of his mouth, useless. And still, he did not move. Everything else in my mind simply shut down. Grief cracked open inside me, drowning me, uncontrollable. Behind me, Simon twitched again, gurgling groans rising from his decimated body. Above me, blood rained down from the heavens. Around me, my people fell to the blades of my enemies. Before me, my husband died. And in my hand, clutched against burnt flesh, was a power strong enough to end it all. All my life I had wanted to be something to fear. It was my father's dream, shouldered from the moment I could understand how to build the strength he expected of me and excise the weaknesses he disapproved of. If I used the blood of a god, I would certainly become something to fear. I would be more terrifying than Simon was. I could destroy him. Septimus, the Bloodborne, I could kill every enemy and make sure no one ever would question or threaten me or my people ever again. They would write legends about me. But that would be the power of destruction. I would not be able to save Rain. I opened my palm. The skin cracked and bled, charred by the power of the vial I clutched against it. Yet that ugliness only highlighted the incandescence of what sat within it. The blood a galaxy of colors against the darkest shadows of night. It was so incredibly beautiful. I blinked and a tear rolled down my cheek. I wouldn't lose one more thing, one more person. I couldn't. This blood could be used as a tool of destruction, yes, but how else could it be used? Once I had cherished my dead father's dirty wine glasses, I'd wrapped myself in his discarded clothing. If someone had offered me a piece of his hair, I'd have wept for it. This blood was more than a weapon. It was a piece of someone who had once been loved. It was a bargaining chip, priceless to the one being who I knew would treasure it above all. As Simon grunted and pushed himself to his hands and knees, I lifted my eyes to the sky. Beyond the winged bodies above, storm clouds swirled in unnatural wisps, like fish circling a pond, fragments of suspended lightning dancing between them. I'd only seen the sky like that once before, when we had the attention of the gods. I raised the vial above my head, as if offering it to the heavens. "My mother of the ravenous dark," I screamed. "I call upon you, goddess of night, of blood of shadow. I offer you the blood of your husband, Alaris. Hear me, my goddess Nyaxia."
Chapter 74. Araya.
For a few long, terrible seconds, nothing happened. The battle continued. Simon kept slowly pushing himself to his knees. Rain kept dying. More tears welled up in my eyes. No, this had to work. It had to. My arm shook as I held the vial to the sky, held it as high as I could, my eyes staring unblinking into the god-touched night above. "Please," I pleaded silently. "Please, Nyaxia. I know I've never been yours, not really, but I'm begging you to hear me." And then, as if she heard my silent prayer, there she was. Time seemed to slow, the figures above moving in slow motion. The breeze through my hair grew cold, the strands suspended in midair. My skin pebbled, as if in the moments preceding a strike of lightning. Just like last time, I felt her before I saw her. A staggering sensation of overwhelming adoration and overwhelming smallness.
"What?"
a low melodic voice said, deadly as a drawn blade.
"Is happening here?"
There was only one thing, I realized in this moment, more terrifying than the presence of a god. And that was the rage of one. I slowly lowered my eyes. Nyaxia floated before me. She was just as beautiful, just as terrible as I remembered her. Hers was the kind of beauty that made you want to prostrate yourself before her. Her hair floated in tendrils of ink-black night. Her bare feet hovered, delicately pointed, just above the ground. Her body, dipped in silver, gleamed and shone like moonlight in the darkness. Those eyes, revealing every shade of the night sky, were dark and stormy with utter fury. The world itself felt that fury, ceded to it, as if the air was desperate to please her, the stars moving to soothe her, the moon ready to bow to her. Perhaps the fighting stopped when Nyaxia appeared. Soldiers on all sides, shocked by what they were in the presence of. Or perhaps it just seemed that way, because everything else ceased to exist when she arrived. Her shoulders rose and fell with heavy breaths. Her bloody lips contorted into a snarl.
"What,"
she ground out,
"is this atrocity?"
She spat the word, and with it a burst of power shook the earth. I cringed, my body folding over reins as rocks and sand cascaded from the ruins. Wisps of stormy shadow surrounded her, leeching out into the air with the ominous darkness of tragedy. Simon had managed to get himself up to his knees. He turned to her, bowing, blood spilling from his mouth as he spoke.
"My goddess."
I didn't even see Nyaxia move. One moment she was before me, and the next she was at Simon, hoisting him up with a single hand and ripping the pendant from his chest with the other. It was so sudden, so brutal, that I let out a little gasp, my own body bracing tighter over reins. Nyaxia let Simon's corpse, limp and bleeding, fall to the ground without so much as a second glance. Instead, she cradled the twisted creation of steel and teeth in her hands, staring down at it. Her face was blank, but the sky grew darker, the air colder. I was shaking, whether with shivers or fear, or maybe both, I wasn't sure. I still leaned over Rain, and I couldn't bring myself to stop, even though I knew it was pointless. I couldn't protect him from the wrath of a goddess.
Her fingertips traced the pendant, the broken teeth welded into it.
Who did this?
I wasn't expecting that. For her to sound so broken.
My love, she murmured. Look at what you've become.
The pain in her voice was so naked, so familiar. No, grief never really left us, not even for the gods. 2,000 years, and Nyaxia's was still tender as ever. Then, in an eerily sudden movement, her head snapped up. Her eyes landed on me. My head emptied of thought. The full force of Nyaxia's attention was devastating. The pendant in her hands disappeared, and suddenly she was before me.
How did this happen? She snarled. My own children, using the body parts of my husband's corpse for their own pathetic gains? What incredible disrespect.
Talk, Aurea. An urgent voice reminded me. Explain. Say something. I had to force the words out. I agree, I said. I'm returning what is rightfully yours. Your husband's blood, my mother. I opened my fingers, offering her the vial in my shaking palm. Her face softened, a glimmer of grief, a glimmer of sadness. She reached for it, but I moved it away. A stupid move, I recognized right after I'd done it, when her sadness was replaced by anger. I ask for a deal, I said quickly. One favor and it's yours. Her face darkened.
It is already mine.
That was a fair point. I was gambling with something that was not mine to trade, with leverage that was laughable against a goddess. I was so afraid. I was grateful I was kneeling because otherwise, I was sure my knees would have buckled. I tethered myself to the sensation of Rain's fading heartbeat beneath my palm and my own heightening desperation. I appeal to your heart, my mother, I choked out. As a lover who knows grief, please. You're right, your husband's blood is yours. I know I cannot and would not keep it from you, but I ask you for a favor in return. I swallowed thickly, my next words heavy on my tongue. If I wasn't so distracted, maybe this would have been funny. My entire life I dreamed of asking Nyaxia for this very gift, but never did I think it would be under these circumstances. I said, My mother, I ask you for a Coriatis bond. Please. My voice cracked over my plea. A Coriatis bond. The God-given gift I'd once thought would give me the power I needed to be Vincent's true daughter. Now I was giving up my father's greatest weapon to bind myself to the man I'd once thought was my greatest enemy. To save his life. Love over power. Nyaxia's gaze flicked down. She seemed to notice Rain for the first time since she'd arrived, with only passing interest.
Ah, she said, I see. Much has changed, I suppose, since the last time you begged me for his life.
Before, Nyaxia had laughed when I'd asked her to save Rain's life, amused by the antics of her mortal followers. But there was no amusement in her eyes now. I wished I could read her face. I wished I had better words for her. Please, I choked out again. Another tear slid down my cheek. She leaned down. Her fingertips caressed my face, tipping my chin toward her. She was so close that she could have kissed me, close enough that I could count the stars and galaxies in her eyes.
I told you once, little human, she murmured. A dead lover can never break your heart. You did not listen to me then.
And Rain had broken my heart that night. I couldn't deny that.
You should have let the flower of your love remain forever frozen as it was, she said. So beautiful at its peak. So much less painful.
But there was no such thing as love without fear. Love without vulnerability. Love without risk. Not as beautiful as one that lives, I whispered. A flicker of something I couldn't decipher passed over Nyaxia's face. She reached for the vial in my palm, and this time I let her. Her fingers touched it tenderly, like the caress of a lover. She let out a soft, bitter laugh.
Spoken by someone too young to see the ugliness of its decay.
Was this what she told herself? Was this how she stifled her grief over her husband's death? Did she convince herself it was better this way? The last time I'd met Nyaxia, she had seemed a force greater than any mortal could comprehend. Now she seemed so tragically imperfect. Fallible in all the same ways as us. It would have bloomed, I said softly, if he had lived. You and Alaris, your love wouldn't have withered. Nyaxia's eyes snapped to me like I'd startled her by speaking, like she'd gone somewhere far away, forgetting I was here at all. For a moment, grief collapsed in her beautiful face. Then she shuddered it behind an ice wall, pristine features going still. She snatched the vial from my hand and drew herself back up to her full height.
I feel your pain, my child, she said, but I cannot grant you a Coriatis bond.
The words obliterated me. My skin went numb. My ears rang. I could not hear anything over the sound of my heart shattering at my goddess's feet. Please, I begged.
I am a romantic, she said. It brings me no pleasure to deny you. But you and him, you were created thousands of years ago as enemies. Those roles are marked onto your skin. Hiyaj, Rishan.
My chest burned, my air mark pulsing as if awoken by her mention of it. Roles given by you, I said, even though I knew it was stupid to argue with her.
Roles given by your forefathers, she corrected. Do you know why I created the Hiyaj and Rishan lines? Because even before Obitres was the land of vampires, your peoples fought. A perpetual power struggle that would never end. It is what you are meant to be. If I grant you a Coriatis bond, your hearts would become one, your lines intertwined. It would erase the Hiyaj and Rishan legacy forever.
It would eliminate 2,000 years of unrest. And it wasn't until Nyaxia nodded slowly, giving me a long, hard stare, that I realized we were saying the same thing. Nyaxia had no interest in ending 2,000 years of unrest. Nyaxia liked her children squabbling, constantly vying over each other for her affections and favor. Nyaxia would not grant me a Coriatis bond with Rain, would not allow me to save his life out of nothing but petty stubbornness. I opened my mouth, but nothing came out. My anger swallowed all words. Nyaxia sensed it anyway, though, a flash of disapproval over her features. She leaned close again.
I'm handing you victory for the second time, my child. Perhaps you should simply take it. Don't all little girls dream of being queens?
Did you? I wanted to ask her. Did you dream of becoming this? Instead, I rasped, then tell me how to save him. Her perfect lips thinned, another drop of blood rolling down her chin with the shift of her muscles. Her lashes lowered as she took in Rain's mangled body.
He is practically already dead, she said.
There has to be something. Another indecipherable emotion over her face, perhaps genuine pity. She flicked a tear from my cheek.
A Coriatis bond would save him, she said. But I cannot be the one to give it to you.
She rose and turned away. I didn't look up from Rain's battered features, which blurred with my unshed tears.
Aurea of the Nightborn.
I lifted my head. Nyaxia stood at Simon's broken body, nudging it with her toe.
Treasure that flower, she said. No one will ever be able to hurt you again.
And then she was gone. No one will ever be able to hurt you again. Her words echoed in my head as I let out the sob I'd been choking back. I leaned over Rain, pressing my forehead to his. His breath, ever fading, was so weak against my lips. I did not care that Simon was dead. I did not care that the Rishon were retreating. I did not care if I had won my war. Rain was dying in my arms. Slow rage built in my chest.
Treasure that flower. Perhaps you should just take it. Spoken by someone too young to see the ugliness of its decay.
With every memory of Nyaxia's voice, it grew hotter. No. No, I refused to accept it. I had come this fucking far. I had sacrificed so much. I refused to sacrifice this too. I refused to sacrifice him. A Coriatis bond, Nyaxia had said, but I cannot be the one to give it to you. The answer was right there. A Coriatis bond could only be forged by a god, and yes, Nyaxia had denied me. But Nyaxia wasn't the only goddess my blood called to. She was my father's goddess. My mother's was just as powerful. Crazed hope seized me. I looked up to the sky still bright and swirling with the thinning barrier between this world and the next. And maybe I imagined it. Maybe I was a naive fool for it, but I could have sworn I felt the eyes of the gods on me. My goddess, Acacia, I cried out, my voice cracking. I summon you in the name of my mother, your acolyte, Elena of Obitrace, in my greatest time of need. Hear me, Acacia, I beg you. And perhaps I wasn't insane after all, because when I called, a goddess answered.
Chapter 75. Araya. Acacia's beauty was not the beauty of Nyaxia. Nyaxia was beautiful the way many women hoped to be, albeit a million times over, a force greater than a mortal mind could even comprehend. Acacia's beauty, though, was terrifying. When she landed before me, I started shaking. She was tall, even taller than Nyaxia was, with a regal, strong face. But more imposing than her stature were the wings. 6 of them, layered over each other, 3 to each side. Each one acted as a window to a different world, a different fate. A field of blossoms beneath a cloudless summer sky, a bustling human city beneath a lightning storm, a forest raging with fire. She wore long white robes that pooled around her bare feet. Strings of light, the threads of fate, dangled from her 10-fingered hands. Her face tilted toward me, cloudy white eyes meeting mine. I gasped and tore my gaze away. A second of that stare and I saw my past, my present, my future blurring by too fast to comprehend. Fitting that was what one would see, looking into the eyes of the Weaver of Fates.
Do not be afraid, my daughter.
Her voice was the amalgamation of so many different tones. Child, maiden, elder. Fear is just a collection of physical responses, I told myself. And I forced myself to meet Acacia's gaze again. She knelt before me, observing Rain and then me with detached interest.
You called, she said simply.
You answered, I almost replied, because I was still in shock that she actually had. I groped for words and came up empty-handed. But she grabbed my chin, gently but firmly, and looked into my eyes like she was reading the pages of a book. Her gaze flicked back to Rain.
Ah, she said. I see.
A Coriatis bond, I managed. I ask you, great goddess, for a Coriatis bond. My mother devoted her life to you, and I'll offer you anything if...
Acacia raised a single hand.
Hush, child. I understand what you seek. Your mother was indeed a devoted follower of mine. I am quite protective of those who walk the unknown beside me.
She scanned the carnage that surrounded us, lips thinning with a brief wave of disapproval.
Even if they walk it, at times, to questionable ends, tampering with forces that should not be disturbed.
I bit back a wave of shame on my mother's behalf.
Please, I whispered. If you grant us a Coriatus bond, if you help me save him, I swear to you.
Again, Acacia raised her palm.
Do you understand the gravity of what you ask of me?
This, I knew, was not a rhetorical question. Yes, I said, I do.
Do you understand that you are asking me for something I have never once granted before?
My eyes prickled. Another tear rolled down my cheek. Yes. Only Nyaxia had ever granted a Coriatus bond. Never a single god of the White Pantheon. But I was willing to try anything, anything.
Countless times my followers have begged me to save their loved ones from death. Death is not the enemy. Death is a natural continuation of life, an intrinsic part of fate.
The visions in her wings shifted, as if to demonstrate, revealing glimpses of dark skies and bones and flowers growing from rotting flesh.
What makes you different?
Nothing, I thought at first. I was just another grieving lover, standing on the precipice of one more loss she couldn't bear. But I rasped out, because he could do such great things for this kingdom. We could, together. We could make things so much better for the people who live here. People, my voice grew stronger. People like my mother, who devoted her life to you, even when trying to survive so many hardships here. Acacia tilted her head, as if she found this answer interesting. Compared to Nyaxia's blatant emotionality, she was distant, calculated. I couldn't read her. I knew Nyaxia, despite her cruel dismissal, felt my pain. Acacia, I feared, was only analyzing it.
My cousin spoke the truth to you, she said. Granting a Coriatus bond between two heirs would alter the course of the House of Night forever.
It would end millennia of warfare.
Yes, but it would come with many challenges as well.
My hand closed around Rain's limp, bloody fingers. I know, we would face them. It almost surprised me how easily this answer came to me. It wasn't a platitude, wasn't a performance, it was the truth. Acacia stared at me for a long moment. A shiver ran up my spine. The uncomfortable feeling that my past and future were being rifled through like pages in a record log. Then she let out a soft chuckle.
Humans, she said softly. Such hope.
I waited, not breathing. At last she said,
If I grant this request, do you swear that to me? That you both will use the power I'm granting you to fight for what is right in this world and the next, even against great opposition?
My heart leapt. Yes, I said. Yes, I do.
You will be under my protection as an offspring of my acolyte, and that protection will extend to him as your heart bonded. But understand that my cousin will not be happy about this development. She will not act against you. Not today.
Not tomorrow, but someday soon, Araya of the Nightborn. There will come a day when Nyaxia brings a great reckoning.
And when that day comes, you must be prepared to face her displeasure.
Goddess fucking help us. And maybe I was a fool for it, but I still didn't hesitate. Yes, I said, I understand.
I see your truth. I see the possibility in both your futures. I see that there is still much to come. And for that reason, I will grant you a Coriatus bond.
The words were so unbelievable. At first, I couldn't even grasp them. Thank you, I tried to say. But it drowned in a sob.
Quickly, Acacia said. He fades.
My eyes fell to Rain's face, motionless, battered, covered in blood, features broken beyond recognition. And yet, for some reason, the image of that same face on our wedding night came to my mind. The night he had promised himself to me, and I couldn't offer him the same.
This will be painful, Acacia warned.
She touched my chest right over my heart. Painful was not the right word for it. I gasped at the bolt of agony, like someone was spearing me straight through, hooking my heart and dragging it through my ribcage. Still, I didn't flinch, didn't close my eyes. I looked only at Rain's face. Through the haze of pain, I heard our wedding vows. I give you my body. I give you my blood. I give you my soul. Acacia drew her hand from my chest, slowly, as if pulling a great weight, and then pressed it to Rain's. A blinding white light engulfed us. The pain intensified.
From this night until the end of nights.
I doubled over, my forehead leaning against Rain's.
From daybreak until our days are broken.
Acacia drew her hands back, a thread of light between them.
I bind these hearts together. Her voice rippled through the air like water. Their souls are one, their power is one. From this moment until their threads cross this mortal plane.
Her hands splayed, 20 long fingers weaving together our fates, and then, in one abrupt movement, drawing the threads taut. I doubled over, unable to move, to breathe. My eyes squeezed shut, my head emptied of everything except for 5 words. I give you my heart. The words I wouldn't, couldn't say to Rain that night. The vow I could not make. Now I whispered those words over and over again, clinging to them as my soul itself shattered and reformed. I give you my heart, I murmured against his skin. I give you my heart. I give you my heart. The light faded. The pain ebbed. Acacia sounded very far away, her voice like a wave rolling from the shore as she said,
It is done.
The words faded off into oblivion. And so did I. Part 7. Dawn. Chapter 76. Aurea. I did not dream of Vincent. I dreamt of nothing at all. I opened my eyes to a blue cerulean ceiling. It was the same ceiling that I had awoken to every day for nearly 20 years. But this time, from that first moment, everything felt different. As if my innermost self had been rearranged. I felt stronger, like my blood thrummed through my veins with greater force. And I laid my hand over my chest, over my heart, and weaker. Like a piece of my soul, the most vulnerable part of me, was now outside my body. My mind pieced together the events of the battle, not quite in order, and then I shot bolt upright. Every thought disintegrated except for his name, Rain. My room was empty. An unoccupied chair sat beside my bed, and a few empty cups and plates on my nightstand, like someone had been here but had just left. Rain. I threw back the covers and stood, only to immediately topple back to the bed with a dizzy spell that had my stomach lurching. An odd tug on my awareness disoriented me, like I was seeing something out of the corner of my eye that wasn't there, or witnessing this room from another angle. Mother, I must have really hit my head. I got to my feet again and went out into my living room, then threw open my apartment door. Rain. I wasn't sure how I knew exactly where he was, only that without thinking, I was walking over to his chambers and... The door swung open just as my fingertips brushed the knob. He was alive. He was alive. I didn't take in anything else about him, only that he was here and alive and standing right before me and alive and smiling and alive. And then his arms were around me, and mine around him, and the two of us held each other for a minute and an eternity, like two halves reunited. I buried my face against the bare skin of his chest and squeezed my eyes shut against the tears. For a long time, we stayed like that. And then, eventually, he murmured against my hair,
"So you missed me."
Arrogant prick, I thought. But aloud I said, "I love you." I felt his shock at those words, actually felt it, like it was my own. And then, the wave of contentment that followed, like the sun falling over my face. His arms tightened.
"Good, because now you're really stuck with me."
I scoffed, but the sound was muffled against his skin, and it sounded so much weaker than I'd intended. His lips pressed to the top of my head, and he whispered,
"I love you too, Aurea. Goddess fucking help me, I do."
He pulled me into his apartment, though it was more of a stumble, the two of us not wanting to let go of each other long enough to properly close the door, let alone walk. The need to be physically close to him was disorienting, like our very essences had been united, leaving us with an innate need to get our flesh as close as possible. It wasn't sexual, or at least it wasn't sexual right now. It went deeper than that, more intimate. I realized, after a few moments, that our heartbeats had aligned, his quickening slightly, mine slowing. And I knew this because I could feel his, the same way I could feel my own. He noticed it the same time I did.
"Strange," he murmured, "isn't it?"
Strange was an understatement, and yet it also seemed like too negative of a word. It didn't feel wrong. It didn't feel unnatural. It didn't even feel frightening, which shocked me because I would have thought that having my soul linked to another person's would be utterly terrifying. Linked, bonded. Goddess, we had actually done that. We had a Coriatis bond. The realization hit me so hard that I pulled away from Rain abruptly, nearly sending myself toppling over until he caught me.
"Easy."
I stopped short, my brow furrowed. I grabbed his shoulders, not to steady myself, but to hold him straight. I'd been so relieved to see him that I hadn't even stopped to really look at him. He was shirtless, wearing a pair of low-slung cotton trousers, his torso covered with the fading remnants of his injuries and the bandages that had treated them. But my eyes fell to his chest, his throat, and the air mark that now covered it.
"Ix's tits," I whispered.
He frowned, looking down at himself, but I dragged him to the mirror instead. When he saw himself, his eyes bulged.
"Ix's tits,"
he agreed. The mark was nearly identical to mine, albeit slightly modified to match the shape of his body. I was wearing a loose camisole that exposed my neck and shoulders, leaving our two marks visible side by side. The resemblance was uncanny. He had the same layered phases of the moon over his throat, and the smoky rendering of wings over his clavicle and shoulders, except his were the feathered wings of the Rishon. We stared at each other in the mirror, and then had the same idea at the same time. Rain turned me around, sliding the straps of my camisole off my shoulders, letting the garment pool around my waist and leaving my torso exposed. He positioned me. My back was to the mirror, and I peered over my shoulder into it.
Sun fucking take me.
Beside me, Rain turned around and matched my pose. The air mark on his back was nearly identical to the one I now bore on mine. The phases of the moon spread across the top of my back, spears of smoke running down my spine. We looked at each other. The reality of what we'd done, of what had changed, settled over us both. Nyaxia and Acacia had both warned us that a Coriatis bond would mean the end of the Rishon and Hiage airlines, combining them into one. We'd altered the course of the House of Night forever. I felt a little dizzy, and not from my injuries. A wrinkle formed between Rain's brows. The corner of his mouth twitched in an uncertain, almost smirk.
"Regrets, princess?"
Regrets? The answer was easy and immediate. Fuck no. The smirk became a full-on smile, and if I'd had any regrets, that smile would have erased them anyway.
Good, he said. It looks better on you than it does on me anyway.
I glanced at Rain's muscled back and wasn't sure that I agreed. I jumped a little as the door burst open.
Gods!
I looked up to see Misha whirling around, nearly dropping the tray in her hands in her hasty effort to cover her eyes.
I leave you two alone, unconscious, for 5 minutes, and you're already in here tearing each other's clothes off? At least lock the damn door.
Chapter 77. Rain. I thought it would be more of an adjustment than it was. The Coriatis bond, it turned out,